Welcome to DLSN, a podcast brought to you by McGuire Woods. DLSN promotes the advancement of women in private equity and finance through conversations with women in the private equity and finance space. These conversations provide both insights and practical takeaways to inform your deal work and enhance the culture of your organization. If you're ready to drive the industry toward a more inclusive and diverse environment, then it's time to come to the table.
Hello, and welcome to the DLSN podcast hosted by McGuire Woods in our Women in Private Equity and Finance group. Today, we have an exciting interview with Kristen Gunther of Revolution Growth. She has had an extensive career throughout the private equity and now venture capital space, and we are glad to have her here to share her wonderful expertise and her experience as a woman in the private equity world. So first things first, Kristen, could you introduce yourself to our audience members and just tell us a little bit about yourself and your current firm, Revolution?
Sure. Thanks so much for having me. This is a lot of fun. My name is Kristen Gunther. I'm a partner at Revolution Growth. Revolution is a venture firm based in Washington, D.C. We actually have a couple of different funds underneath the Revolution umbrella. We have a seed stage fund, a venture fund, and a growth fund, or I should say series of funds. And I work exclusively on the growth funds at Revolution. We typically invest $20 million or so into companies that are really high growth, that have really strong unit economics across a bunch of different verticals. And being in DC, one thing that's different about us is that we really lean hard into the policy side of things. We have a couple lobbyists that work on our team that help our companies navigate policy and regulatory issues. And it's something that has really moved the needle for a lot of our companies and is something that makes us different.
That is so interesting, I think, especially being based in DC. I feel like that's not an area that a lot of people are associating venture capital work, but like you said, it is a great differentiator. And can you tell us a little bit about an exit that you've had recently that kind of exemplifies your role and why you're at Revolution?
Sure, yeah. We were fortunate to have a couple of exits last year in 2023. One of them I worked on, which was a company called Scopely, which we invested in a handful of years ago. We led their Series C. It's a mobile gaming business, so it was a super fun company to be involved with. I sat on the board there. When we first invested, they had a couple of games that were driving most of the revenue. And by the time we exited, they have a full portfolio of games. We're doing close to $1 billion in revenue total. So really exciting growth trajectory there. And they sold to Savvy Games in July of 2023 for close to $5 billion. So that was a super exciting one.
Oh, yes. That sounds very exciting. And I'd love to hear a little bit about what attracted you to the private equity space and also why you also enjoy being in the venture capital space now.
Sure. Yeah. At a little bit different path, having done both. So I knew going into business school that I wanted to do private equity. I had done investment banking. I had done sales and trading research. And when the financial crisis hit, it kind of gave me a minute to kind of pause and reflect on what I enjoyed doing during my career thus far. And I sort of found that what I really liked was when I was doing investment banking, working with the management teams to get up to speed on their business and kind of help, you know, advise them on strategy and how they should be thinking about transactions and getting to know them. And I always was a little sad when we had a deal closed because it was sort of a goodbye. So I realized that I wanted to be part of working with teams, management teams, to help drive strategy and make companies better and help them grow faster. And I wanted to do that sort of cradle to grave and not have it be so transactional. And so that led me to want to do private equity, which I did out of business school at a firm called Perseus here in DC. I absolutely loved it. I was there about 5 years when, sadly, the founder of the fund passed away. And we ended up winding down the firm. And sort of over that period of time where we were in wind down mode, I met the folks at Revolution and was really intrigued by what they were doing, the types of investments they were making. They were investing in companies that I had heard of. A lot of them were kind of household names. They were growing really fast. And I thought it was exciting to be potentially work with companies that were on that type of a growth trajectory versus private equity, where you're talking kind of high single digit growth at best. And so to be part of a firm that was really partnering with these companies that were growing, you know, 40, 50, 100% a year was super exciting. So I made the jump about 8 years ago to venture capital.
I think that is such an interesting perspective that at least I hadn't really thought of about the difference between the kind of traditional private equity space versus venture capital and getting to really be in the weeds with your baby as it's growing very rapidly and very excitedly into that next stage of revenue or of hiring, of performance. Definitely sounds like an exciting path.
For sure.
And staying in that same vein, what is a lesson that you've learned concerning what's required for success in PE versus in VC? And obviously it could be the same lesson, but just kind of your tips for that are necessary to be successful.
Yeah, I mean, I think beyond the obvious of having a solid foundation in kind of finance, I think you do have to be pretty tough. I think you have to hold your ground and in some cases be cynical, particularly when there are interests that are not aligned. I think I get some of that from working in restructuring for a couple of years while I was banking. I kind of learned that pretty quickly. And I think the other piece, particularly as it relates to venture coming from private equity, one thing I really had to learn was how to potentialize. Like in private equity, to a large degree, by the time you invest in a company, it's a fully baked cake. Whereas in venture, you know, the cake kind of just went in the oven and you have to really think about what that cake could be. And that's a skill I really had to work on. And it's, I think, pretty critical for success. And I think the other piece that is pretty critical in both private equity and venture would be just the ability to multitask and to kind of walk and chew gum at the same time. I mean, they're both jobs that require a lot of shifting gears and being able to manage multiple portfolio companies and multiple deals at once. And I think having the ability to do that is definitely key to success.
Thank you for that detailed answer. And for you specifically, what are the character traits that you feel have really enabled you to be so successful within each space?
Yeah, I mean, I grew up in a lower middle class family. I started babysitting when I think I was 12 or 13, and I worked part-time in high school and I worked my way through college. And so I think there's a work ethic and a persistence there that is super helpful. I think I'm pretty pragmatic and level-headed, which is something, you know, some of these deals, they often go up, down, left, right, and you kind of have to have a level head oftentimes. So I'd say that's something that has been useful as well. I'm also pretty organized. And I think in any job that comes in handy, but particularly as it relates to what I was saying before about having a multitask and be really good at that, I think the organization is helpful too.
That is very useful to hear. And I think very nicely segues into the work-life balance part of the conversation that we're interested in having. And to kind of start there, can you share a personal anecdote or experience that you feel illustrates how your journey in navigating work-life balance within the finance, private equity, VC industries?
I think it's been an evolution. I mean, I think for me, it's sort of like there's the before times and the after times as it relates to having a family. Work-life balance looked a lot different before I had a family than it does now. I'd say like before I had a family, I think I really prioritized my career and I prioritized work and sometimes at the expense of other things. And looking back on it, I think that was probably the right move. Kind of post having a family, things are a little bit different. And I'd say I actually struggle to think of a specific anecdote because the juggling act is so constant. I can give you an example from any day of the week last week. So I think it's pretty constant. I'd say a lot of it has to do, I'd say travel specifically as it relates to this industry, you know, being on the road a lot, traveling for board meetings, that often presents a lot of times where things just get hard. I think one thing that does stick out, there was a period of time where we've been lucky. We've always had really good help as it relates to my kids and nannies and such. But there's a period of time that we didn't have anyone. My kids were just in like a preschool type thing that had extended care. And the pickup time was 6 o'clock and you could never be late. And it created it literally every day of the week. My husband and I would argue over who had to do the 6 o'clock pickup. And it created like so much stress and frustration that we went back to having full-time nanny, even though my kids didn't necessarily need somebody to be there with them full time, but it just made sense for our family. And you always kind of have to pivot, I think, a lot and make sure that you get that help when you need it, because there were definitely times I was resistant to it. And it just ends up making the best sense for everyone.
I think that makes a lot of sense. I feel like bringing in that kind of help and assistance can be kind of jarring or worrying for people. But as you said, it's necessary for your own sanity in order to make
For sure.
to make it all work out. And what are some other strategies or techniques that you found most effective in managing the demands of your career while maintaining a fulfilling personal life and family life?
Yeah, I think this ties back to one of my other comments around being organized. I'm like an extreme planner. I think when my assistant first started working for me, she couldn't believe how I had my day, my Outlook calendar planned down to like the minute. And it really is critical, I think, for me at least, like keeping everything, you know, keeping the trains running on time. And so that's definitely a tip I would give, is just be hyper organized and hyper planned. You obviously have to be flexible when things change, but just like knowing what's going on every day down to the hour and often the minutes has been just critical for me. I think the other piece, this is specific to me, but I personally, like, I just don't feel mom guilt. I know that's like a weird thing to say. And I, of course, love my children, but I also am proud that I'm a working mom. I grew up in a family where my mom didn't work, and that was the choice that she made. But, you know, our family had suffered consequences of that too. And I feel like I'm able to provide things for my family that I'm proud to provide because I'm a working mom. And so I recognize there's going to be trade-offs there, but I personally don't feel guilty about them. Of course, I'd love to spend more time with my kids, but I don't beat myself up when I'm not able to be there for something. So that for me takes a big load off as well.
Yes. Oh my goodness. That is so wonderful to hear. I do not have a family or children now. I feel like that mom guilt conversation is something I see so often, especially for women who are in these high-powered positions. And so it is wonderful to hear that you have really internalized all of the wonderful benefits that come from being a working mom and being able to be in these high-powered positions. And there isn't shame or anything in making those kinds of choices for the women who do want to work and move up in their careers, in their fields. So thank you for that.
Yep.
And I imagine that kind of essential to making this work is being able to have boundaries and stick to those. And that's something that a lot of women, and especially young women, can have difficulty with. So how do you go about communicating those boundaries and expectations with colleagues or superiors in order to ensure that you have a healthy work-life balance and can show up in the ways that you would like to at work and at home?
Yeah, I mean, I think to me, I think there's two pieces to it. One is reliability, which I think doesn't get as much focus these days as maybe it used to. I don't really care when somebody has something done or what part of the world they're in or who they're with, as long as it gets done well and on time. And so I think I have no problem if someone says, hey, I have to be out the next 3 days, but I know you need this, so I'm going to get it to you tonight and you can review it tomorrow before I go to the airport or whatever. Like, have a clear plan, a clear understanding of a deliverable and what's expected and what you'll do. And I think like people actually doing what they say they'll do is unfortunately less common these days, but I think it goes a long way towards earning the trust of someone. And I think once you get that trust, you get a longer leash to be able to go on vacation or to do what you need to do personally. I think that's pretty critical.
And I think that ties in nicely with the organization point that you made earlier. It's like to have your having that wide view of what is due and what is expected of you, so that you're able to navigate and slot things in where it's most important. And within this, how do you kind of go about prioritizing?
Yeah, I think the other piece to it is respecting that other people have boundaries and work-life balance issues as well. Like, I've had definitely times when people push back and say, oh, sorry, I can't get those slides to you. I'm coaching basketball tonight or something. And it's like, well, that means I have to do them myself when I'm putting my kids to bed. Like, instead, it should be a dialogue, not an absolute. So I feel like I'm a reasonable person. I'm happy to have those like reasonable conversations about how something can get done in a productive, collaborative manner. I think when people just expect their particular demands or needs are more important than someone else's is when you can get into some trouble.
That is an excellent point. I like the language of an ongoing dialogue about as these obligations shift and change over time, and also that everybody is trying to balance work and life. And so it's so important to to stay on top of your own things and to ensure that you're communicating with those around you so that they're able to enjoy their work in life.
Mm-hmm.
And have you encountered any specific challenges that you feel are unique to women in the industry when it comes to achieving work-life balance? And if so, how have you gone about overcoming those?
Yeah, I mean, I think it's particularly acute maybe for working moms, especially when there's a competitive dynamic in the workplace where you're competing for a promotion or competing for a spot or something. I think that can make things pretty hard because, I mean, parenting is truly another job and it's hard to compete with someone who doesn't have another job. I've definitely come up against that and it's really hard. And you, like I alluded to before, you have to you just have to problem solve. And for me, that was getting more help and acknowledging that I needed that help. I think there's also, I mean, we talk about this. First of all, there's no such thing as work-life balance, right? And so I guess acknowledging that and then acknowledging that there's pressure beyond like work-life balance. I think sometimes people think, oh, it's like being a working mom or whatever. It's like a million things. You're supposed to be skinny. You're supposed to have a clean house. You're supposed to go out with your friends once a week. You're supposed to be a perfect wife. You're supposed to do all these things. It's like if you actually try to hold yourself to all of those things, it's absolutely exhausting. And I think just recognizing that you can't always be all of those things at the same time helps sort of relieve the burden, I think. And I guess the other piece too, particularly, and I feel this more in the last couple of years, just around school events. And I'm sure my husband gets these emails too, but I certainly get a lot of pressure to participate in events at my kids' schools. I go to two different schools. It's a lot of events and volunteering and all these other things. And I'd say that's like something I feel uniquely, I mean, I don't think that my peers here at my firm have as much, maybe I'm wrong, but I feel like I get a lot of that pressure to spend time doing that. And I certainly do it when I can, but it's hard to commit to stuff like that on top of everything else I already do.
I feel like that goes back to the kind of getting rid of that, avoiding that mom guilt.
Mm-hmm.
And as you said, your colleagues likely are not having to deal with all those pressures and likely are not feeling guilty about it. And so why should you, when you are also working in the same high-powered, high-intensity industry as they are? So I personally very much enjoy that perspective. And so amongst this like high-pressure environment of the finance industry, how do you find time and what are your techniques for recharging in order to prevent burnout?
Yeah, I mean, one thing I like to do hobby-wise, I'm a big runner. And so for me, getting a run in or a workout in is sort of a non-negotiable. For me, it's like brushing my teeth, right? Like it's not like, will I run tomorrow? It's like, when can I run tomorrow? And so for me, that's usually pretty early in the morning before anybody in my house is up. But I'd say like for me, that's really my outlet. It's stress relief. It's like my time. Nobody's bothering me. That's something for me that has been really helpful. The other piece has changed over the years. I'd say earlier in my career, I didn't take much vacation time. But the last 5-10 years, I think I've been pretty intentional about setting aside that time to be with my family. Now, this is maybe a hot take, but I would say I don't ever fully unplug. The only time I think in my 20 plus career I've ever unplugged was for my wedding. And that's also intentional. Like, I don't know. I think it's like if people know that they can reach you in an absolute emergency, then it releases the pressure and you feel like you can go away a little bit more. And I think in reality, as long as your team understands what emergency means, you shouldn't really be needed that often. And does that mean I'm on work calls sometimes during vacation? Yes. But it means I get to take vacation more frequently. And to me, that's a trade that I'm willing to make because it's really important time with my family. So yeah, that's how I recharge.
I feel like that is such a true example of the work-life balance, or I guess the other term that's so popular now is work-life integration piece of it, and how one integrates work into life so that you can really get the best of both worlds instead of having to sacrifice in spaces that you prefer not to. To continue this conversation about women in the private equity and finance industries, what are some strategies that you think can help women advance in their organizations and reach these kinds of upper echelons of power and prestige within the industry?
Yeah, I think one piece of advice I would give on that front is figuring out what's valued the most at your firm. It's not always obvious. And in a world where we're all doing 100 things and you have your to-do list is 100 pages long, I think knowing and constantly going back to what actually matters, what is valued here and what isn't. And I think women, I'm guilty of this myself, like we're kind of doers and we're generally like raise our hand to get things done. And it can result in spending your time doing things that actually aren't that important to the firm. And like maybe somebody needs to do them, but that somebody doesn't always have to be you. And I think like, I don't know, at least I operate under the assumption that like hard work gets recognized. And the truth of the matter is it doesn't always. It gets recognized if it leads to something that's considered valuable by the folks who run the firm. And so figuring out what that is, I think, is really important. And like I said, it's not always obvious. I look at people at the firm who have been really successful and who have gotten to the top and figure out not just what did they do, but what didn't they do? What did they not spend their time on? But that's something that I think I have thought about a lot over the years, and I think can be really helpful, again, specifically for women who tend to kind of take it all on themselves.
Yes, that is such excellent advice. I remember someone told me that they're like, that while it's important to have note takers in meetings, that so many women will volunteer and raise their hand to do it. And unless your goal is to be one of the best note takers in the firm, then you have to stop yourself from falling into those kinds of roles that are more prescribed to women to take on. Mm-hmm. And I think that is something that I'm trying to focus on in my own career as someone who just likes to participate, volunteer, and raise my hand, to be much more strategic around what I'm volunteering for and how it's actually going to help me advance. So thank you for that. Mm-hmm. And so do you think that there are any benefits to being a woman in the workplace and especially within the finance industry?
I'm generalizing here, but I think women tend to be a little bit more attuned to some of the personal dynamics, which can be helpful. I think often we're pretty good at managing relationships, which is also really important. I'd say it's even more important in venture capital, where deals are really coming through personal networks, and being able to maintain and harvest those networks is pretty critical to the job. I think, again, working moms in particular are super efficient. They just want to get it done as well and as quickly as possible. So I think that's definitely an advantage. I mean, on the investing kind of diligence side, I mean, women make a lot of the decisions in this country from a consumer standpoint, whether it's healthcare or consumer goods. And so I think we often understand those businesses better at the outset. So I think that's helpful too.
I really appreciate that last point. I'm just thinking, or I'd love to hear more about how in an industry where women leaders are still a rarity, why do you think it is important to have women in these positions of leadership and really helping drive the decision-making for firms?
Yeah, I mean, I think beyond the obvious, I think everyone knows the facts around diverse teams and how the facts show that they perform better. So beyond just the diversity part, I think people tend to hire people like themselves. That's also sort of a fact. And so I think having women in senior positions to be able to kind of reach down the ladder and help pull up those below them is super important. It's not fun feeling like you have to be the one to break the glass ceiling, kind of knowing that there's someone around the table who sort of has your back and can really be a cheerleader for you in those conversations, I think is super important.
Thank you. And you've given a plethora of good advice during our chat here, but can you share any other kinds of nuggets of wisdom that you've been given during your career that you feel have really paid off in the long run?
Yeah, I think the best advice I got at some point, and I think it's relatively common advice, but I really took it to heart, which is to do your boss's job. And that's really how you get promoted. You get promoted by taking things off the plate of the person above you and showing that you can already do the job. You don't get promoted generally before you can do the job. You generally get promoted once you've shown that you can already do it and you're already doing it. I think that's particularly true in venture capital, where you kind of have to behave like a partner before you're promoted to partner. But I think the general advice around being a little bit proactive, volunteer to take the call alone and free up the partner or the MD's time, going kind of the extra mile and doing things that might be a little bit outside your your pay grade or your, you know, what's in the job description, I think goes a long way. Again, especially these days, where I'll also say, like, you didn't really ask this, but I think, and I feel a little bit like an old lady talking about walking in the snow 10 miles on the way to school. But back when I was investment banking, I mean, we worked so, so hard, you know, 120 hours a week constantly. And I don't think that is necessarily the right amount of, there's obviously no work-life balance in that, but I do think working really hard and working until what needs to get done is done is something that has fallen a little bit by the wayside. And so I think, like, I always felt like outworking people was a way to get ahead. And I think to a large degree, that's been true for me. I think showing that you're like willing to stay late to get something done instead of pushing it to the next day, or again, picking up some work that would relieve somebody else on your team or your boss and free them up to do something else is really, really important.
That is such excellent advice. I feel like this as one of the oldest members of Gen Z, I definitely feel like there has been a shift kind of in the way that a lot of young people and early career professionals see their role within organizations, which has negative impacts. But one of the positive impacts, I think, is that for those who really do want to get in the weeds and do what it takes in order to get the job done, you get to see even more benefits from having that mentality.
Yes, agreed.
Can you share any resources, whether books, podcasts, or practices that have been instrumental in helping you achieve your success within the finance industry, but also for establishing a sense of harmony between your professional and personal life?
Yeah. And again, I think like running has been helpful for me. I also lead a book club that I've led for, I think, over 10 years now. That always gives me a sense of balance. I don't watch TV, not because there's anything wrong with it, but because for me, it's just the solve in terms of how do I work a hectic job, travel, have kids, run early in the morning, all that stuff. For me, the solve is to not fall down TV rabbit holes. And so I end up listening to a lot of podcasts in the car during my commute. That's how I get my pop culture fix. That's how I take in media around venture and finance. And so I have sort of a handful of podcasts that I flip between, and it gives me, I feel very well-rounded. I know what's going on with Taylor Swift, and I know what's going on, you know, with the Fed. And so I think that has been helpful in making me feel like I kind of at least know a little bit about things.
I definitely feel like that's the ultimate balance. As long as you know about the Fed and about Taylor Swift, all of your bases are covered.
Yes, yes.
And so now I want to wrap up this interview with our signature question. And once again, thank you so much for taking the time to chat with me today. What advice would you give your younger, let's say 22-year-old self before you embarked on this wonderful career?
Yeah, I don't know that I would have done too much differently given the cards that have sort of been available to me at the time. I graduated from college during when the tech bubble burst, and I graduated from business school during the financial crisis. So those were both like very stressful times. I guess if I could give advice, I would have told my younger self to just relax. It'll all be fine. It's easy for me to say that, I guess, being in my early 40s now and kind of looking back. I think maybe I would encourage my younger self to take some risks earlier in my career when the stakes were a little bit lower, whether that's coming into a firm at its, maybe more at its infancy, or jumping into an operating role or something like that. That would have been valuable to do. I also feel like when I look back at the first decade of my career, again, I worked really hard, and I worked really hard to make sure that things were getting done and the details were all correct. And I think sometimes I wish I had more time and had maybe more awareness to step back and really observe and think through some of the higher level questions and things that were going on with some of those transactions, rather than be so in the weeds all the time. I think it would have been helpful to make sure I was sort of catching everything at that high level. I still have to push myself sometimes to remind myself to do that, because you can get carried away in some of these things and you don't always see the forest through the trees. So I guess that's the advice I would give.
That is excellent advice, especially I think for when you're early in your career, it's like the details feels like the work, but so much of the work is how those details fit into that larger picture. And so thank you for, honestly, thank you for all the wonderful advice you've given our viewers and you've given me during this interview that I will be integrating as I progress in my own career.
Thank you so much.
Thank you for joining us at the table for this episode of DLSN. If you have a recommendation for an inspiring interviewee, a question you'd like us to ask, or a topic you would like to hear covered, or if you'd like to tell us about women-focused initiatives in the field, please email us at wpef@mcguirewoods.com. We look forward to hearing from you. This podcast was recorded and is being made available by McGuire Woods for informational purposes only. By accessing this podcast, you acknowledge that McGuire Woods makes no warranty, guarantee, or representation as to the accuracy or sufficiency of the information featured in the podcast. The views, information, or opinions expressed during this podcast series are solely those of the individuals involved and do not necessarily reflect those of McGuire Woods. This podcast should not be used as a substitute for competent legal advice from a licensed professional attorney in your state and should not be construed as an offer to make or consider any investment or course of action.